Alright, the California meeting will have these meetings coming to order and let the record reflect that it is 10:34 a.m. on Tuesday, April 13th, 2021. Members present are Representatives Hall, Story, Dorchester, Cox, Scroggie, and myself, Chair Spiles. And we have a call to conduct business because we don't manually establish your cell phones. Let's not say this is yesterday. Remotely from House Harbor, this is not your day. And today, no reason to have beverages. I do not know any of the moderating for our folks who are being pressed today, as always. But I'm going to take your two pieces of legislation, all sponsored by Representative Chris Dunn, who's both focused on the permanent fund. First up is HB 165, which is an act leading special appropriations to the permanent fund. And after that, when you can, will you consider House Joint Resolution 1 proposing amendments to the Constitution of the State of Alaska, relating to the Alaska Permanent Fund to appropriations from the permanent fund. Before the committee's House Bill, we receive version A. Representative Jonathan Christmas, as we believe, approach the table, and just yourself, ready to start with the unit you have as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Jonathan Christmas, please. And here's the House Bill 165. 165 is basically a legislative vehicle to contemplate an action legislature has previously taken and I believe should consider again, which is transferring some from the registered account to the principal of the permanent fund where the money would forever be protected for future generations of Alaska and be protected from legislative spending. And just a little bit of history. There was a similar bill introduced by myself last year. We were also amendments to the operating budget. They were just introduced and passed. Budget cycles that were bipartisan, by caucus, if you will. The IDC, you see and also our panel, the other body that's taken. Distinct interest in this notion, particularly more aggressive approach than our body of the House has historically. As the market continues and the value of the ERA continues, I basically want to move forward to the legislature if this bill is sort of a vehicle for the conversation. I'm interested in looking at doing another transfer from the register to the principal. Especially given, I think these are tight up budget aids and their purpose. To some extent, perhaps destination, the legislature is thinking having to almost every other savings happen to see that. They're approaching throughout. And so, more than ever before, through my perspective, the managers are looking at that risk for being overspent and being paid just like every other account. The legislature has had this discussion over the last decade, and so House Bill 165 would be sort of a mitigative or protective measure against overspending.
Alright, and the bill is pretty short, it is pretty straightforward. There are three sections, I believe.
Yes,
three sections are great.
Yes, but I'm sorry for my question, three sections. Yes, the function and the content of the bill would not escape anyone with my little second review. And I just want to put on the record that some presently named in the bill is something that we want to some sort of case lawyer or talking with legislative. But in simple, we'll put forward a number of different people of the community. But I think that the framework that I don't know if you're personally talking about, I don't think any number would be a big number. Is a number that we use three times the 5% community draw in the emergency zone account. And I think there's a given risk to the emergency zone account and that kind of transfer would be
appropriate. And I'm going to start with representing Ethan joined us at 1:37 a.m. So maybe the fifth hour of HB 165. All right, we're going to go ahead and make a copy. Representative Jefferson, I think we also have today great value testimony to deliver balance to the community last morning on collaboration. And then we have available questions on teams of our students and leader administrative finance. Representative Josephson's information when we get him a copy of the bill, you could just describe the three sections of it.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. Section one describes the transfer in the sum from the manager of the permanent fund to the principal of the permanent fund, which is, I think, now the constitutionally protected portion of the permanent fund. Section two speaks to lapsing or the capital division of law amounts, and section three is the effective date. And the effective date would be immediate. And I guess if I may just take that opportunity, I think that can help consideration here with any transfer from the manager account to the principal is almost all of us agree we want to make the permanent fund as large as possible and protect it. And the sort of counterbalancing consideration that the committee and legal legislature should have in mind is that given how the permanent fund is currently structured and given that the earnings reserve account is kind of the kind of liquid capital that the legislature can access, and it's the idea that the special legislation wants to restructure the permanent fund, and what I would suggest is a much more sustainable and sort of fiscally manageable way. But in the current structure, this entirely consideration is we move money out of the area into the principal one, the area gets smaller. We run the risk that if there's a market downturn in the value of the permanent fund falls, which it has done before, and which it will do again, but we imagine that almost certainly will happen, there will be a market corruption at some point eventually. And the area can get really small really fast, and then we legislature are in a sticky wicket or in a corner because the principal will be one of these in the reserves. Dollars in the corner, in the dividends, be it cloud services, be it anything, just like the dollars in the area. But maybe that's a risk that even without a transfer is always there in our current structure and always being reduced during the recession. In the earnings reserve account to serve as a buffer in the event under the current contract to allow for market fluctuations, and so that buffer is approximately 3 to 4 times any drawdown, and this bill does conform with that notion. So that concludes my remarks, and I'm happy to answer questions. All right, first we're going to get off to the
Chair, Mr. Bell, I'm concerned about the statement read four times, but I just did this as a little different. And sponsor had talked about three times, but I felt the brand fund was on record preferring four times.
But, you know, it was reduced in trustee paper 9 to 3 times. So you will find differences within the trustee's own recommendations. I think I would take the resolution over a paper and the resolution does say 4 times.
And what was the date of the paper that was?
The paper was issued in December 2019. And the resolution was 2018, I'm sure.
I just want to make sure that I understand. You said that the paper reduced it to 3 times from 4 times. And that was in 2019 or 2018. So we're back, my notes are not clear here.
So the resolution was adopted in 2018. Subsequently, the trustees embarked on a paper that stated all of these issues. And in lesson number 5, reforming the earnings reserve account, they reduced it to 3 times.
Right, thank you, Representative Brooks, and the representative Jerry.
And there's almost an interesting situation. Medically, there is a lot of, I guess, distrust of the fiscal discipline of the legislature. But on the other hand, if this account was a lot smaller on an individual level, does it make sense, given the future outlook of the state and et cetera, to reduce liquidity at this point?
Chair Representative Brooks, this bill does not reduce the credit in the fund, but it does reduce the amount available for future appropriations. This movement of money allows it to continue to be invested, similar to current principal. So it's generating future revenues about forestry law, so it doesn't preclude some spending in the future. It may not be all spending, but it does generate future revenue. The second thing that I would note is that this is more akin to me of your retirement income. And the restrictions that are placed on spending a retirement account when you know you need to rely on that retirement account to really deliver income for 20 plus years in the future. And so this to me is akin to putting that cap off you get to do like I do now that I'm over 50 years old and want to put additional money into my retirement account as a result. And so this is what that is equivalent.
Under attorney's budget,
place to do with the county manager, we would probably be seeking some guidance from the Department of Law as to how to actually present that. But you have a little different, you can show a net loss, and it can be unrealized, and then as the market starts to swing back in your favor, it can turn positive again, which is why we're having an upside to the market. Well, then that may be allowed to show it, and probably that is we can have our unrealized.
The other thing, when we're looking at this 3 or 4 times, the draw test, is July 1 the wrong date to look at? Because I looked at July 1 last year, it was either 5.3 or 5.5 billion. And that had been reduced to my mind by the debt part that was unrealized, and that part that wasn't disbanded or transferred. And am I thinking of it incorrectly?
You are thinking about it correctly. And in fact, when the $4 billion transfer for FY20 was put into the budget bill and adopted, it was in the waterfall after all of the things had been done, and it was set at up to $4 billion. And so there was, and that had been reduced by the governor's line item veto power. So there was a recognition that the balance on July 1st might be different than what it was when the appropriation language was adopted by the legislature.
Thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Two questions. The first question is, what impact do you anticipate that passage of this bill will have on our federal agencies? I'm going to take a loan, they ask me questions about how much the local ask is to have to draw the loan. It seems like we're reducing through this $4.34 billion to pay off obligations. I imagine if it was a 30-year loan, maybe someone would be able to look at the source more likely than 30 years from now that we'll be having available a little bit of shortage or a little bit of the credit rating impact that we have now over the next 2 to 3 to 4 years.
So the chair representatives, you know, that's a really interesting question. I'm fortunate in my job now that I'm not required to interact with the community agencies that falls under the Department of Law. My past experience would indicate that the reaction might be mixed because I think they would value this sort of the structural future provision, as you stated, the fact that money will now be around generating revenue in a longer time frame, and that would be a rating, and that would be a rating positive. But your point is also equally valid that the ability to meet long-term obligations could be in question. So I think that would be a really good question for the committee to ask the Department of Revenue.
So my second question goes back to another topic. So if we are recommending 3 times the amount being available, even after, as I mentioned, that this particular amount would fall under that formula, at least for this year, is there something special about this year that drives the 3 times the amount? Because it certainly seems as if we're going to reduce the account by over $4 billion. Can easily end up maybe the next 12 months with a situation where we're either a person that they're paying for or less than that. So is there something special about this year, or is that recommendation for next year and the action as well?
During the chair, Representative Eastman, two things. That is an ongoing recommendation, and we are not requesting that the APFC, the board has not requested this appropriation. So, I guess that's a policy decision to be made by this body and the other body.
Thank you very much.
And that Representative Wolf and Representative Brooks.
Thank you very much, Chair. I have a couple of questions. I'm trying to understand the flow of money into the earth, and out here in the region, between the parts of the parallel cloud. But with the example of Kepler Planar Products or others, or affiliate method down here, we have a wave transfer with draw the 5% P1P problem, which is approximately $3 billion right now. So if we have a chance amount, there's $9 billion in there, you can withdraw it three times. So the earnings reserve being reduced due to bad performance, and stock market or otherwise, just on its own, and that $9 billion, which is $9 billion or $12 billion, in the earnings reserve, in a bad year, lower that number, just on its own, regardless of the amount of
interest. Does it sort of represent a rule when you're going to see the earnings reserve account reduced in total size? Is any unrealized gain portion of the earnings reserve account? So if you think about what we spent on February 28th, we had, if I can most recently, I didn't say it available, we had $9.9 billion in realized earnings, and yet $3.1 associated unrealized gain associated with the earnings reserve account of investments. Where you would see the reduction is in that $3.1 billion. And in fact, if you look at the March 31 statements from 2020, when we had a huge market drawdown, you will see that that unrealized gain was less than $1 billion at that point in time because of the huge loss in value that occurred over the month of March 2020. So that's where you would see it month over month for year end if it happened to be happening on June 30th.
Oh, yeah. So if there was some time to use the information that your bill has got low to the standard level, obviously you don't have to do the P1P draw, or is it basically 2008? At that point, could the board or whoever makes the decision to decide to sell on some assets and realize a gain, like sell it, stocks, property, whatever, do a sell off, because the earnings are going to tail up and then go into the earnings reserve, correct?
And it's here, if there are unrealized gains and an investment action is taken to realize those gains, then you have to get earnings reserve account.
So, thank you all about this. So, can you share that with me? If you were in a situation, you could pick up the earnings reserve through a sale, and if the balance got scary low.
The care of the earnings reserve account is going to receive regular cash income throughout the year, where we get roughly $1.2 to $1.5 billion just through stock dividend payments, rentals, the regular cash that comes off. The rest of the cash that flows into the earnings reserve account has all been generated out of commercial financial investment decisions. They have not been made for any other reason. And I don't think a corporation, the trustees, the staff, want to be put in a position where we are now making investment decisions for non-commercial financial reasons.
The number 3.4 times is big for land. So it's approximately $9 billion or $12 billion. But as the P1P draw is taking a while every year, if it comes in, like you see from rents and earnings and so on. So over time, that $3 and $4 will creep up again and will probably be in the same position with $3 and $4. Does it make any sense? Or, I'm not going to speak to this question, but instead of doing a draw out, just passing a statute that says, earnings reserves shall contain 3.5% or 15.3% of the value of the our product and assessing power earning 3.5%. So, you know, just make that 15% or 20% of the overall value. Would that serve the whole purpose? Again, I'm not primary at the ball. But would that say it serve the same purpose? And when the owner should come back in a few years and move it to the building from one to the other?
To the next slide, Representative Wall, because of the lawsuit that went to the Supreme Court a couple of years ago, any movement of that range is required, does require an act of appropriation by the legislature. Right, so I have a question for you, or is that a case manager or maybe a representative of Shirani? So I want to follow up on a question. I want to talk about the concern related to the transition. I think you have earlier when the representatives Joseph Shirani asked a question about this, and you said the paper funding, the permanent fund reduced the buffer from 4 times the annual drop to 3 times the annual drop, which makes more sense. And there's discussion about the fact that currently there's about 16 going after the most recent reporting period in the year, including unrealized gains of 3.1%. Does that paper, the paper specifies that the 3 times drop needs to be realized gains, or does it also include unrealized gains?
I don't believe, Judge Donald, that it actually specifies what the measurement is. It doesn't say that it's just a recognition of the entire earnings as our not just the reverse part.
And so, theoretically, if Taylor and everyone's had a rules question, focusing specifically about only on the ERA, that you're running, but I've got a lot of regret in a couple of different ways. If we were to transfer enough money over to the corpus to allow for 3 times the annual drawdown in the ERA, including unrealized gains, because theoretically you could sell those assets in order to realize the gains that were held in the ERA, that would be consistent with paper 9 and the improvement policy.
Yes, that is correct. And I think one of the nuances for the committee to understand about how we invest the earnings reserve fund, the earnings reserve, as a reminder, the earnings reserve fund doesn't have its own standalone portfolio. It owns a proportionate share of every single asset, and then the principal owns the majority of that asset. And when the earnings reserve fund is reduced either through market or through draws or through any mechanism, when it is smaller in comparison to the principal, a proportionate amount of the unrealized gain also goes back over to the principal. So you'll see fluctuations in the earnings reserve account and the unrealized gains because of this phenomenon that we go every month and reallocate everything out based on the proportion of the earnings reserve account to the principal of the fund. So when you talk about drawing it out, I don't think it's unreasonable to be looking at the balance that is unpermanent, realized, as I refer to it. That's been the unrealized gain portion of it. But there is something to sort of have in the back of mind about how that moves with the balance in the earnings reserve account, that unrealized gain portion.
Right, so just to clarify, because I think I'm covered for two different answers. We're trying to find sort of the way you don't destroy it in the event that HJR1 doesn't get across the finish line. Probably, I think that those funds are less interested in protecting the ERA. And actually, we feel very strongly about it. And I think that, Representative Fox identified that there's a bit of mistrust of the legislature, fiscal percent of the legislature, and that's there, which is about $17 billion out of savings.
over the last 37 years. And so I personally have some concern. I was able to get a quarter vote to achieve that. But, and now we've spent, you know, if I was a good girl at an ERA, and these are your tables of the authorized constitutional amendment to constitutionalize the PLD, which didn't pass and probably got through both chambers at the first vote threshold and then a vote of the people, and we need some shorter term question that we're looking at right now, which we try to turn somebody over. And trying to find the right number that hits that allows us to continue to have that 3 times our annual draw, which is roughly, you know, 3 million-ish for the purposes of conversation today. You know, should we be factoring, should we be pulling out the unrealized gains in order to ensure that we can do that? Or is it practical for us to include the unrealized gains when we're calculating that 4 million? I heard you say that we did exclude that, and I would be saying, well, maybe not, because they're sort of the ERA and the corpus are co-mingled for the purposes of the NAF. I could clarify.
Sure. So if we took out of this bill $4.3 billion, that's about $0.9 billion to move over. That's roughly, let's just keep the math super easy and assume half of the $9.9 billion that's in there. In terms of uncommitted revenues. If we did that, if you passed that bill, we would take half of the 3 million unrealized gains that would go over with it. That's all I was trying to say.
Okay,
so you're going to see a reduction of the earnings reserve account that is more than just the $4.3 billion. Because when we say that there's $16.1 billion, remember there's $9.9 uncommitted, there's $3.1 committed, and there's $3.1 unrealized gain. So when you move $4.3 billion out of uncommitted, you have to remove a proportion of the associated unrealized gain.
Okay. Because the unrealized gain is associated with unrealized gain assets.
Yes. It's not cash.
Yeah.
It's just, it's something that's shown on paper because financial accounting requires us to do that.
All right, thank you. Representative Eastman, the representative Schrody.
All right, thank you. Now, in the situation where we are failing to assess new higher inflation, I just want to know what pathogen is really with the amount that is in your reserve account versus in the corporates. Would that impact in any way the ability of the corporation to quickly respond to higher inflation?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, no, it would not.
Thank you. All right,
Representative Schrody. Thank you, Senator Chair. So, with the earnings reserve being yeah, legislature being able to incorporate the rules in their major sort of account. Does the Department of Corporation recognize that that money is subject to any amount of appropriation in a given year and therefore change their investment strategy, recognizing that they may need to have any more appropriation? I mean, can you speak to that at all and better understand the approach to their major sort of account?
When that account was created, the statutes stated that it shall be invested with the permanent fund, and the trustees did that to meet the asset allocation of the permanent fund, the principal itself. Nothing has changed about our mandate. Nothing has changed about our maximizing retirement and making basically about being told by no such change has been made to direct us to make that change. So absent that, we believe we can manage through under the current statutes.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much for your time, Mr. Chairman. We're going to go ahead and set aside this bill for the remainder of the committee. We'll pick up again next week. So next Friday, we'll move on to House Bill Resolution 1. Version B, also sponsored by Representative pass through your resolution representative.
To make the hard decisions of balancing the budget between more cuts, more taxes, and basically balance the budget just like every other legislature in the country has to balance their budget. And that, from my perspective, is the place we need to be forced into. Again, the place we should have been forced into 6, 7, 8 years ago, when we have $16 billion in the bank, and we'd be forced to do that.
Resolution would not dissolve a PhD formula that would remain in statute.
That is not the Chair of Plain Justice, and that's correct.
But it takes away the thing that the public has used to have a bond for the degree they get. Is that correct? That is, the ERA would no longer exist.
The teacher of Plain Justice, that is correct. The money from the permanent fund every year would be available to that is a cosmetic difference. Right? Money is coming from the permanent fund. At the end of the day, in the legislature, we need those dollars for compression.
I should have not reading your questions, but that is my intention to get to our value testimony first. So I'll read one last question and read one on value testimony, then we will take questions, right? I just want to know that, right?
Sure. It just takes me to make the point. So part of the performance in the resolution, they're going to want to write this resolution to its culmination. Have you found out that?
Asking a clarifying question, I think I intuit the thrust of the question.
I could see supporters of the donor program feeling some insecurity about this. How would you respond to them?
I think we might get into that question after we interview the very testimony, because I think this is a very short-sighted question, and I would like to make sure that we get to our invited testimonies first, representative. I think that this is probably the big issue that will come up in the chair who's interested in this particular issue. That's why, so I'm not going to discuss this issue. We absolutely want to make sure that we have the opportunity to hear from our invited testimony first, and then I'll get to my representative to address that topic in more detail and ask if any final questions along the topic. All right, thank you. And first, I'm going to go to Ken Wang with the Institution of the North, and then we're going to go to Angela Rodell with the Permanent Fund make some comments on the bill, and then we'll hold up questions again, both for the bill sponsor and for any of the testifiers as well. Mr. Wang.
Hello. Thank you so much. Great, whether it don't just remain the same. few points that I think I made today, I missed lessons. And this was a comment about the specific one, but the first is that this is a very old idea. The concept of a constitutional human being has been around longer than the birth doctor. This is the most
impacts on the
be unable to get the money out. That is kind of suffering. What suffers about that is suffering seeing that it will happen. And that's done right now for the next 20 years. It is difficult to really quantify the impacts of what would have on credit ratings, municipalities, and other things, but all of that is not worth this lesson. So it's difficult to do all of this to do. Thank you. running the plan, after which we know we can no longer make these unstructured files in the energy zone. We can until then, it gives us a 2 or 3 year runway, a buffer. And that does not have been a drive negotiation on the other issues we've been putting off for several years, and whether we haven't experienced before. I think that is really critical to solving the bigger issue. So, one comment on timing, and this question. They would be fast to do this once every 2 years. As you know, we're going to get a resolution approved with 2/3 support both bodies and the next regularly scheduled ballot. And the closer we get to the election, the more difficult it is going to be to pass it. You know this better than I. And every year this remains undone, the future becomes a little less clear. So I urge you to pass this resolution before we advise it. You can continue to work on a comprehensive fix, but no matter what else happens, we need to put in place the one piece of a sustainable fiscal plan that almost everyone agrees on. Treat the fund sustainably. Do this one thing, and the rest will follow. Next slide, please. I'm going to close this comment on constitutional changes because it's not supposed to be taken lightly.
For the work that many years in for the deal on the state and the last department from what we're saying. I'm going to actually keep my history on a very brief one on each trailer and price solution I was referring to today. This is a resolution that is incredibly important, has been important to the program from trustees for an incredibly long period of time. The timeline was highlighted for you in the previous presenter's presentation. But I would just feel like that in numerous resolutions that I've written on this, especially starting in 2003, I was tasked a constitutional amendment resolution in which there was a body that would fail to meet the hurdle. But it has not changed the underlying value that a constitutional PMP provides for the permanent fund. It allows the fund to continue to benefit all generations of Alaskans. It provides a predictable payout through that mechanism. It protects the fund's opportunity for real growth. We had numerous conversations about the ability for the fund to grow. And equally important, from my standpoint and the Christine's standpoint, is that the payout is compatible now with the investment strategy and policies that the board trustees have adopted. significant changes were made to accounting rules in 1997 timeframe, like 90s, which is really what spurred this, the timing of the 2000, 2003, 2004 efforts by the trustees to make this happen. And so having the DOMB constitutional amendment, that's called the Parliament HDR1, is something that the trustees support and have supported for many years. And so with that, I think we have a remarks, and I'm happy to take questions.
All right, so we will take a question by the bill sponsor for Michelle and I will return it out.
Well, thanks for the question. I'm not sure.
issue, the left would like your answer, but I agree that it is the heart of the politics around this issue. How do you address the development of the world?
There's no need to identify principles anymore because everything will stay in a common fund, is the best way to describe it. And so it becomes one fund. There is no principle, there is no earnings, there is just a fund. And then 5% of it.
So, I guess, another way back to the same question. So, does the corporation benefit from the fact that currently this designated by law attaches only to the principal?
That is this endemic in the form that came from everything that was provided by law. Legislation came forward that created the Early Reserve Act, that's the building that's provided by law, that became the receptive model instead of going straight to the general fund. So if you think of it this way, if you repeal the Early Reserve Account statutes, what would you do with the income? Just a process of transferring the income in its entirety over to the general fund, because that's what the Constitution tells us we're required to do.
Thank you. So that's not really what I'm asking for. What I'm asking for is, does the corporation see a benefit under the current limitation on the types of investments that can be made currently? If I'm just reading a letter of the constitutional amendment, it says that the principal can only be invested as designated by law, which doesn't seem to speak to here, the
the principal could be invested in something outside of what is designated by law. And the corporation will hold that as a benefit.
Thank you. Compromise
put a certain amount of money in excess of the normal fiscal year, they're being taken out and set aside to provide some extra fiscal buffer for the legislature in that budget year, or even future budget year, sort of transition money to help the legislature ease into this new sort of budgeting reality and reality of the permanent fund. That's something I've thought about that would be possible, maybe even possible, if we're going to go ahead after the Senate voters and kind of be in this uncertain situation of not having certainty about how the voters will not ratify the amendment.
Thank you for the follow-up. Through the chair, I see that we are looking at the first five of the preceding six fiscal years. And I guess two things on that. It specifies including the fiscal year just ended. Normally, I would assume that that would be assumed, obviously, the fiscal year just ended is one of the preceding 6 years. I would be looking for clarification, maybe, on the fiscal year that hasn't ended, whether or not that should be included in the calculation. And then secondly, obviously, the first five or six years are not including the sixth. So if you have a down year, you don't include that until next year. But then if we have an up year following the down year, we include the down year, but we don't include the most recent up year, which is going to limit our ability to provide and speak to those two things.
Plus, our team has been through the charts and discussed something that I think Mr. Dell and Mr. Chair need to have good perspective. It's my understanding that this smoothing mechanism is relatively standard. And that the second scenario that you gave, that yes, there might be an effect from that juxtaposition with a down year and up year, one of those years being within the 5 year window, another year being outside the 5 year window, that the norm now is broad enough, i.e., in 5 years, that effect is sufficiently smooth and not create your year budgeting volatility and what the amount available would be. And then, to answer the first part of your question, why we don't include the current fiscal year, not yet ended. I said enough about it from the different experts in the room, which I'm afraid that I'm going to talk about.
Thank you.
I think it does a couple of things. First of all, it generates that union effect that the bill sponsor, the resolution sponsor, referred to. The other thing it does by having that 1 year delay, not including a fiscal year most recent mandate, is that it removes all uncertainty from your appropriation process, maybe use of the PMD. So you go into the budget debates and you know to a penny exactly how much revenue you have with regard to the PMD to spend. One of the challenges we've had under previous calculations is that you end up having to do an estimated to be number waiting for the fiscal year to end, and then we have to do some really rapid fire closeout of the fiscal year to meet deadlines like meeting the deadlines. Historically, it's used the current fiscal year has created some interesting machinations about trying to meet the deadlines for that payout. So, this prevents that and creates that massive effect.
Yes, very practical.
Thank you. All right, are there other questions from the representative? Can you address CBD 1 or do you want to do more than but that's where they also have to ask questions.
I'm trying to pick on one of the slides, and I don't want to lose your
services. And don't get me wrong, I did not have the department driven that I like 5% constitutional amendment. I think if you're just worried, you said you were agnostic about it, the DFTC. So you just got this focus on protection for the others, constitutional amendment, because if you really beyond the spread of the DFT, which a lot of people in this building probably are okay with. I guess that would protect the dividend if you have $1.5 billion going to the dividend, which is about $2,300 per person. But if you want to protect services and protect the entire taxes, you have a problem, because if you get $1.5 billion out of what could potentially go to services, you're going to have to make them up either cutting the services or having a high tax. So, I mean, those are three things. Yeah, it's amazing to make two out of three, but not get all three, even if you put up the warrant done, because depending on what you're taking the dividend, if you have a voluntary end, you're taking the dividend. You understand that. And I guess I just worried that if something, and this is just me speaking, but the 50% of the PLMD goes to dividends, I see a big hole in our services. And $1.5 billion in taxes would be pretty high, and I don't know if that's even possible. So I guess at some point, I think all of us, not just in this building, have to take a position on it, and maybe you guys may have to, if you want to, that's all. I don't know if you want to respond to that. Two out of three of those things are pretty good.
Well, I appreciate you talking about the issue. And you're recommending me to take a position on that eventually. But now our goal is just to try to push this up the priority list of the legislature and for the public.
Thank you, Chair Stables. This debate is making me feel younger. It's very similar to the debate I was listening to in 1976. And many of the issues that were debated then are the same as what we are debating now. It really is kind of interesting. But there's quite a few differences. One of the big ones is that in 1976, there was a great deal of optimism about economic development in Alaska. The pipeline hadn't even started flowing yet, but that was going to happen. There was going to be lots of money rolling in. And there wasn't concern about federal default. And now there's certainly less optimism about development in Alaska, and I both in Alaska, and more concern about federal default. And has the Institute of the North factored those two things into their thought process?
Can you clarify what you mean for the chair? Can you clarify what you mean by federal default?
Yeah, the federal debt is reaching a point that there is more concern about the federal government either outright defaulting on the debt or hyperinflation or something in order to liquidate that debt. And that wasn't as big a concern in 1976.
No, I don't think that.
That poses a threat to the permanent fund itself. We need to think about that. And then the other part of the debate going in is today, if the fund is looked at as an endowment for government services, the debate back then was very much whether it's going to be government services or government. But if it is looked at as an endowment for the Internet services, then it winds up being a substantial income transfer, wealth transfer, really to the beneficiaries of those services at the expense of those who are not availing themselves of the services. So that's why the community clarified
for the public that the amendment that was proposed before us is actually agnostic and is silent on this issue. Just for the public, that is one thing.
Yes, and that is true. That, it just strikes me that that almost has to be resolved as part of this decision. It's not that it's a big deal. If this is an observation, I think it's fair. It certainly is fair to say that the dividend was not an outright part of the law that created the claim. That the expectation of the dividend was probably the reason that the permanent fund was established. My recollection.
So, Mr. Kennedy, that was largely last week that the permanent fund was put in 1976 to take a funding resource and make it essentially renewable for the state of Alaska. The dividend was added in 1980 until those things were there. So, there was, significant conversation on those topics. It was not, in fact, part of the original constitutional money. In 1976, I believe that that represented Chris Tompkins' retirement.
Well, that is absolutely correct that it was not. But again, I'm just going on my recollection of the public debate. There was a high expectation of the dividend, and the question then turned out the other way. If the public expectation was just to fund the government.
If I may,
as the chair said, this current language is agnostic on other matters, and we need to be really excited if it will be used in the future legislatures to spend 100% of the community data on their lives. So be it, and that would be them and the voters, and that's the democratic process, and like Josh Barney, that's the way the system would work, and it would be a good thing from a systems perspective. No way is this meant to restrict or preclude that some dynamic balance between legislators, the purposes that they make, and the voters who hold them accountable for how the legislators work. And I think just to speak to Representative Wool's question, Mr. Lane, which I think kind of interacts with your question, my concern is reflected by what Mr. Lane said, which is the default plan that we legislators have to spend on our cities, which is happening outside of the US, and I have every reason to believe that there's going to be an associational deal going forward, and everybody loses. It doesn't matter if you're about public education and social services spending or DC's Fire Fund's representative is a centralizer dividend, the same as we care about, and representative talk representatives we care about. It just all leaves all of those batteries very sweet, just the worst of all scenarios. And so, what this language is meant to do is just say, okay, if you all agree, regardless of what your priorities are, and actually those things are going to spend on our days, and if that, stop doing that, like right now, so we can respect all of our priorities and hash out what those priorities are in future years. And that's really what this language is meant to do.
It says here that exactly what was decided in 1976 on the floor of the world.
Great representative.
Thank you, Senator. Going back to the first page of the amendment, periodically, franchise
before 1985, so I am just clarifying this in terms of time to wrap up this meeting by 1:20. So,
yes, so who's sponsor through the chair? On page 1, we talk about, of course, the Constitution, what sort of things are going to be put into the permanent fund if we missed out for the money we have to share, et cetera. And it's a very, very good, I think, suggestions from constituents that shouldn't we include questions. And even with the sponsors that we answer responsibly, including that people that were dealing with this spirit.
Well, then there's some good it's a fascinating question. I've actually never engaged in a serious conversation about expansion of the royalty for annual resource revenues the state receives. Being sort of in the next in the 25% set aside that the federal fund and the US that does. I mean, philosophically, I think this is just me speaking personally. The more short-term revenue we're able to set aside for long-term benefit, the better. And I certainly would not be opposed to that conversation in a more practical room. I don't know what revenue streams of significance there are that we might actually be able to annex into language in page 116. Although I would just also say that maybe the biggest lever before us in terms of the sort of short-term thing, long-term thing, long-term benefit, dynamic is what drama is. And the language is sort of 1 state 5%. And I'm all for whatever we get the 2/3 vote from this bias. No matter what I be opposed to a monster of any one to all that, I think it's actually a lot of liberty to such a stepping horse principle, even though I would make the 2022 legislature's job that much harder. Without a doubt, objectively, make the long-term future of the state brighter. So just in the spirit, that's something else that this legislature needs to come up.
Is there anything to work on the future legislature to make an additional contribution to the fund?
Representative Schwabe, through the chair, the answer is no. And related, there's nothing that would preclude future legislatures from spending only a portion less, right? About less than 5% of the market value.
All right. That was the last question. Thank you very much to representing Andrew Stoppels from Rhine's Plus Forum and Laura Bell and Ian Lanning for testifying today. So it is my intention to have an amendment deadline for these bills to be Monday, April 19th at 11:30 a.m. The representative is supposed to be submitted to Rhine's Plus Forum in my office by that time to be considered by the committee. And the county committee's bills back before the committee on Tuesday, April 20th, to consider amendments and take public testimony. The next meeting of the House Ways and Means Committee will be this Thursday, April 15th, at 11:30. And I'm here in Bay, Missouri, and it's subcommittee here from Cheryl Foster with the Commonwealth North, who will be presenting the list of budget choices online tool. My office will send a link to this tool if you haven't already done so. It's a great exercise to find and figure out what your ideal fiscal plan would be and understand your budget choices that we have to make. And you have a chance to choose between a combination of, budget cuts, program reductions, revenue increases to balance the budget, and by New York's with the end of the committee as you would like. Cheryl's office is going to present essentially a summary of all of the results that they've had today. That's the computer presented this previously. It's fascinating. We're also going to hear from Julian Walczak with the Tech Foundation on Alaska's tax burden and how it compares to other jurisdictions. And then seeing no further business before the committee. This meeting is adjourned at 1:20.